From EdSurge, too many tools, not enough impact. Districts rethink their edtech stacks. On a recent evening in suburban Chicago, a group of parents, teachers, and administrators gathered to talk about something that, until recently, rarely drew this level of public scrutiny, the role of technology in their schools. The meeting was part of a three-session tech and learning focus group organized by Mary Jane M.J. Warden, Chief Technology Officer of Community Consolidated School District 15, in conjunction with the Teaching, Learning, and Assessments Department. The district, which serves 11,000 pre-K-8 students, spent the past several years like so many others adding digital tools. Now, with budgets tightening and concerns about screen time rising, it was time to take stock. Out of those conversations came something new, a portrait of a digital learner derived from the district's portrait of a graduate, meant to develop clear expectations around what skills students need and, by extension, which technologies are worth keeping and how technology would be used by students toward positive learning outcomes. A re-examination of digital tools was already happening with curriculum reviews and tightening budgets after the pandemic. And then the screen time concerns arose. Participants discussed everything from screen time to what district technology use looks like at home. "We're trying to get much clearer about what this is going to address," says Warden. "What do we need students to learn, and which tools will help us understand where they are?" Across the country, district leaders are asking similar questions. After years of rapid expansion, many are now engaged in a quieter but more consequential phase, reassessing what stays, what goes, and how to decide. For much of the past decade, edtech decisions often began with the product. A new platform promised to boost engagement or personalize learning. Districts piloted it, added it to an already crowded ecosystem, and moved on. "That approach is no longer sustainable," says Aaron Mote, CEO of Innovate EDU, a nonprofit focused on systems change in special education, talent development, and data modernization in schools. In March, the State Educational Technology Directors Association released a free EdTech Quality Action Toolkit, designed to help school and state leaders apply a common set of standards when selecting and reviewing products. The resource provides step-by-step guidance for integrating 5 indicators: safety, evidence, inclusivity, interoperability, and usability into the full lifecycle of edtech decision-making. "We're seeing a shift from 'does this look cool' to 'does this work'," she says. "Districts have less money now, they have to be smarter." The end of pandemic-era federal funding has intensified that pressure. Technology leaders are now expected not only to manage infrastructure and compliance, but also to demonstrate what Mote calls a return on instructional impact. In practice, that is changing how districts approach procurement. Instead of starting with vendor demos, many are beginning with specific learning needs. "If you need to improve third-grade reading comprehension, you start there," Mote says. Then you ask, which tool can move that needle? As districts rethink their approach, a more structured and more skeptical evaluation process is emerging. One major shift is toward tracking actual usage. Platforms like ClassLink and Clever now give districts detailed analytics on which tools students and teachers are accessing, how often they're used, and, in some cases, how much time is spent in each application. That data has helped uncover what some leaders call zombie licenses, products that continue to be renewed despite minimal use. At Joliet Public Schools in Illinois, technology leaders review usage data each spring alongside feedback from a district-wide technology committee. "If we're not getting usage or we have another product that does it better, we start asking hard questions," says John Armstrong, Chief Officer for Technology and Innovation. But usage alone is not enough. Districts are also weighing cost, redundancy, and alignment with instructional goals. During the pandemic, many schools layered new tools on top of existing ones. Now, leaders are working to simplify. "We had so many products that teachers were going to 4 different places to run a lesson," says Kelly Ronnebeck, Associate Superintendent for Student Achievement in East Moline School District 37 in Illinois. "We're trying to get back to a slower, more intentional process. That often means replacing several standalone tools with a single platform that can do multiple jobs, even if it means giving up some features teachers value. In some cases, a newer system can replace several standalone tools at a lower cost but may not match each one's individual strengths." "It's not always a perfect swap," admits Armstrong. "Someone gives up something." At the same time, districts are placing greater emphasis on interoperability and data privacy. Tools must integrate with existing systems like learning management platforms and single sign-on tools, and vendors have to be willing to sign increasingly stringent data privacy agreements. "If a company can't meet those requirements, that's a red flag right away," says Phil Hintz, CTO of Niles Township District 219 in Illinois. Even as districts adopt more rigorous processes, it remains stubbornly difficult to determine whether edtech tools actually improve learning. It's such a huge challenge, says Naomi Hubert, director of the Center for Children and Technology at the Education Development Center. We see so much that doesn't seem to make a difference but costs a lot of money. Part of the difficulty lies in the sheer breadth of what edtech encompasses, everything from learning management systems to specialized math platforms to communication tools. Each category has different goals, users, and measures of success. It's like asking whether books work, says Hubert. It depends on the book, the context, and how it's used. District leaders have to piece together evidence from multiple sources, vendor-provided analytics, small pilot studies, teacher feedback, and occasionally external research. But those data points don't always align. Jason Schmidt, director of technology in Oshkosh Area School District in Wisconsin, describes his approach as trust but verify. I know vendors are collecting tons of data, and they have to. But I still need to talk to teachers and understand how the tool is actually being used, he says. Even then, results can be uneven. A platform might show strong engagement overall but fail to support certain groups of students or vice versa. In Alexandria City Public Schools in Virginia, leaders are developing a formal framework to evaluate both edtech and non-tech programs. But defining value has proven complex. It's not just usage and cost, says CDIO Emily Dillard. In a district with a high number of English learners, some tools play a critical role for students who need targeted or specialized support. You might have a tool that isn't working for most students or takes time to show results, but for a small group, it's the best thing we have. We have to think about what's best for them, too, says Dillard. Recognizing these challenges, a growing coalition of organizations is working to create clear signals of quality in the edtech marketplace. Through the EdTech Quality Collaborative, One EdTech, CAST, CoSN, Digital Promise, Innovate EDU, IST, and SETA are developing a shared framework built around five indicators: safety, evidence, inclusivity, interoperability, and usability. The goal, says Cora Wiley, Senior Director of EdTech R&D at Digital Promise, is to reduce the noise. Right now, there are a lot of certifications and labels, and it's hard for districts to know what to trust, says Wiley. We want to brighten the signal of what quality looks like. The initiative includes a planned directory of vetted validator.